Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investment alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, how to make cities smarter, more efficient, and sustainable for their residents, also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. A growing number of cities across the world are making inroads in sustainability to become more energy efficient and combat climate change, while also helping to improve the health and quality of life for those who live and work there. Our research has uncovered some of the many resources available to explore the wide range of investment opportunities as cities engage in the practice of becoming smarter, and for cities and building owners to find inspiration and practical guidance for turning those goals into reality. After this interview with someone from one of those resources, we'll give you some info on some others you might want to check out. Our guest today is Minja Yang, Vice President Investing for Health at the International Well-Building Institute, which helps cities and buildings improve health and the well-being environment. Minja, by the way, is spelled M-I-N-J-I-A. Minja, great to have you here. Tell us more about the International Well-Building Institute.
Thanks so much for having me here today, Pat. The International Well-Building Institute is leading a global movement to transform health well-being with our people-first approach to buildings, infrastructure, organizations, and communities. And we do this through our Well-Building Standard, which is a roadmap for creating and certifying spaces that advance human health and well-being. It was developed over 10 years and backed by the latest scientific research and features across 10 core concepts, including air, water, light, sound, thermal comfort, movement, nourishment, mind, community, and innovation. By the end of last year, IWBI just celebrated achieving the milestone of WELL covering over 4.6 billion square feet of projects across 126 countries and also about 25% of Fortune 500 companies.
And what is your role?
So for myself, I have a background in law, economics, and finance, and I'm currently working on the Investing for Health initiative to further promote health, well-being, social justice, and equity across organizations in the investment landscape globally.
When we're talking about making cities smarter and more sustainable, do you work with cities, communities, organizations, companies? Where do you pinpoint your focus?
Yes, of course. We work with companies as well as cities, communities. The WELL Community Standard provides teams with the tools they need to incorporate healthy lifestyle behaviors and design strategy to impact individuals, not just within the walls of their home or space, but also throughout the public spaces where they spend their days. And talking about the city level, IWBI has created the WELL City Advisory to empower cities to create healthier, safer spaces, and also navigate the recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Miami in Florida is the first city in the world to pursue WELL certification for their entire municipal building portfolio.
Oh, are there other trends that you're seeing besides Miami? You just mentioned trends when it comes to developing infrastructure along these lines?
Yes, we are seeing greater interest in connections between people and planet. Human health and planetary health are interconnected. And the UN General Assembly voted overwhelmingly last year, which is they declared a new human right, which is the ability to live in a clean, healthy, and sustainable environment. So we believe there's a great deal of overlap between what is good for people and what is good for the planet. And we're seeing more and more investment in electrification, selecting low-emitting materials, and also optimizing natural light. So that contributes to climate mitigation and also human health strategies. And we're seeing that shifting towards renewable energy sources and adapting transportation system to favor public transit, walking, and cycling. It would also lead to the improved air quality.
So presumably, all of these changes changes have to be paid for. How is the financing happening? Are we seeing some innovative approaches that you've come across?
Yes. When we're talking about city, municipality level of infrastructure development, a majority of the funding still comes from public finance, meaning the government funding. So it's the tax collected over time. And a lot of those money is spent on financially unviable projects, which has social value for the community, but probably brings a lack of return on investment for private companies. So that's the reason why still a majority of those infrastructure funding comes from public finance by the government. But in addition to that, there's also funding from private finance. Governments all over the world, they're seeking collaboration with private sector money, helping to fill the funding gap. And as a result, many private mutual funds have been set up in this way for this purpose. And governments still try to make these investments more attractive by providing tax breaks to individuals who invest their money in those projects. So these are, I would say, the two typical ways when we are talking about infrastructure financing. But going back to your question about what are some innovation we're seeing like municipalities are also issuing more and more green bonds, social bonds, sustainability bonds, in addition to the more traditional bond or more traditional types of finance. And these are the fixed income instruments that has the sustainability label. So it has the deeper sense and commitment to the overall sustainability movement, I would say. And on the corporation side, there has also been a trend of issuance of green bond, social bond. We also see more and more issuance of sustainability-linked loans, particularly interesting because it's driven by key performance indicators of the overall sustainability commitment companies make in the long term. So meaning by achieving those predetermined targets, companies who borrow the loan, they can be on the right track to secure a lower loan interest rate. So that's a great ROI story connected to financing.
So you're saying that then there can be a really good return on investment in many of these projects.
Right. Or we can say it's almost guaranteed. Yeah. So in addition to the return on investment, if your project goes well, if you achieve certain predetermined goals, you shared with your lender, your bank, like the lowering of the interest is almost guaranteed because that's the nature of how those financial instrument is structured in the first place.
So it seems that that would add a lot of momentum to the whole thing too. You know, the positive experiences would make it easier to take on another project.
Exactly. It's not only lowering the capital cost, but also better demonstrate a company or government's commitment to sustainability.
So you've mentioned green bonds, sustainability bonds, social bonds, and mutual funds as ways for typical investors to get involved. Are there other things or categories investors can explore as potential opportunities?
Yeah, I would say there, like as we mentioned, there are a lot of new trends in sustainability in terms of energy efficiency, new technology, for example, sensor technology, building management technology, which are really crucial to this overall movement. And it's so important for investors, no matter it's the public market or private market, to pay attention to those technology trend and put the money in the field that will really advance sustainability in the next 5 years to 10 years.
Yeah. Are there some companies that are more willing to get involved in sustainable projects and diving in?
Yes. In our International Wellbuilding Institute, we launched this program called Well Enterprise Providers, organizations who have in-house expertise, as well as testing consulting services like for their clients. So some of our enterprise providers, for example, Honeywell, Panasonic, they're already giants in the technology space, but they're also gaining more and new competitive edge and understanding of sustainability from environmental, social, and economic perspectives by enrolling in our program. You know, all these learnings can be very well incorporated into their product development and other services they provide to the market. And this new market demand has also created opportunity, I would say, for a lot of startups in the technology space, which can quickly pitch their idea turn a concept into a prototype and then secure funding to start a new business segment.
Well, I know you've covered a little bit of this before, talking about efforts to make cities not only more energy efficient, but more human-centric, I think is the term that you used. Can you get cities to use that as a starting point when they're looking into potential projects?
Right. I think a lot of the best examples in terms of both energy efficiency and human-centric design comes from Europe, because they have really great policies to motivate the corporations and government to take action. So one example is Copenhagen, which really tops my list of all the smart or sustainable cities in the world. They have one of the best strategies for utilizing technology to make the city greener. Mm. So Copenhagen makes very clever use of wireless data, GPS in the buses, sensors in the sewers and garbage cans, and these real-time data and analysis lead to making improvements to decrease the traffic, decrease the air pollution, decrease the CO2 emissions, and really improve the quality of life and the happiness and the convenience for residents' everyday life.
Yes, I've heard about some of the things Copenhagen is doing, like the trash can sensors to alert sanitation when cans have to be emptied, and the traffic and safety lights on paths for bicycles, which almost everyone seems to use, and all the wind and solar power and a lot of other things that consumers can see right off the bat.
Exactly, exactly. Not only consumers who are familiar with those technology, but also a lot of those are also passive intervention. Like you probably don't pay attention every day, but you feel the convenience.
Right.
Yes. Another great example is that the San Francisco International Airport, particularly the Harvey Milk Terminal, So achieving both energy efficiency and health and well-being goals, really benefiting thousands of people, passengers at the airport every day.
Well, that terminal I know has been praised for its use of natural light and low carbon materials, and even has an energy efficient baggage handling system. And I've heard it's remarkably peaceful for an airport terminal. I'd love to see more of that kind of thing in the U.S. Is there something preventing it? Are our regulations too strict?
Yeah, I wouldn't say regulations too strict. And sometimes the core issue might be a lack of regulations. Things don't move fast enough. So it's also because the EU really takes shape in their mandatory sustainability reporting, for example, and also more and more regulations on sustainable finance front as well. So all this suite of regulations is incentivizing people to take action. And they have severe consequence if they don't, right? Not only companies or government who are based in Europe, but also international organizations, international corporations who have a presence, they have to be adapting to those new trends. And talking about examples or things that's done successfully overseas, but probably not being done so much here. One example I can think of is in Japan, they developed a way to treat garbage where you don't burn it, you chemically transform it. So it's very, very expensive. So it's a lot of upfront investment, but there's no stack. Essentially, you break down the chemical content of the garbage and you can still generate some energy from that, but there is no combustion. So really minimize the impact to the air quality. But I don't think US cities are doing that great of a job. So it comes down to, you know, not only regulation, but what type of investment decision do we make? If we don't invest in those infrastructure to transform technology, transform the way we think about sustainability, it's less likely that those next steps can happen easily.
Right. We're talking with Minja Yang, Vice President, Investing for Health at the International Wellbuilding Institute. So globally, many big cities are taking big steps, but most big cities here, like New York, for example, not so much.
Like Copenhagen, Barcelona, Oslo, Stockholm, these are doing great. Is New York City doing enough? I don't think so. We are making progress, but sometimes at a really high cost. Sometimes we are passing regulations that's almost impossible to achieve without the financing and public-private partnership in place. And a lot of cities in Asia, I would say, they are doing really well on the environmental front, but probably not doing so well on the social front, like human rights, diversity, equity, inclusion, issues. It really depends on the different regions' pace.
Okay, so the U.S. is running behind, but There are some positive examples, right? I mean, you mentioned the San Francisco Airport's Harvey Milk Terminal. In New York, I know the Javits Convention Center has a lot of sustainable elements. The building materials, air quality system, solar panels, even a rooftop garden that grows vegetables that go into the building's food supply and food that people can buy when they're there for a conference or whatever. I understand that even some migrating birds make a stop at the garden.
I love the green rooftop. I love like this growing your own vegetable. Actually, in Jersey City, we have a real estate developer called Various Residential who just enrolled in our WELL standard. And they showed me around after I gave a WELL presentation to them. They have their own farm, but it's more like an urban style of farm on the first floor of the building. And then everything is organic and they grow the vegetables themselves and they give it to their residents for free. Mm. So it's a great way to promote healthy living.
Well, getting back to New York for a moment, as someone who lives and works here, what kind of signs can I look for just walking down the street to see that New York, even with all the challenges, is making some progress on the sustainability front?
I start to pay attention every single day. I'm living in Jersey City now.
So right across the river from New York.
I start to pay a lot of attention to the WELL certification logo on the Chase Bank, the ATM, the door beside the ATM. Like I walk by every day to work. I start to see like the Brookfield place in a World Trade Center. They're also WELL certified. I would say like these certification labels, no matter it's from the green building certification or healthy building certification like ours, we are not regulated by the government. It's the market's voluntary decision to adopt those certifications. And these are great signs if the sustainability agenda is being moved forward, no matter there's regulation in place or not.
You touched on this a little bit earlier too, but how can social elements be better incorporated into environmentally friendly projects?
Right. That's a great question. And I think by asking that question, we're already shifting the mindset of like not just laser focus on environmental issues, but also take into consideration other social elements and economic elements. I would say having this mindset in the first place is crucial. We need to understand the importance of investing in the health of our people, no matter it's our employees, our customers, our stakeholders, our investors. These are all important stakeholders in our everyday decision and also help organizations meet growing customer and commercial demand. We also know that creating comfortable, empowering spaces for people to thrive involves more than physical design. That's why the WELL standard not only covering the design elements, but also what the policy should be within organizations. And we have summarized a lot of key research findings. One of that has shown that 76% of job candidates nowadays seek companies that prioritize diversity, equity, inclusion. And global companies with more gender diversity are 21% more profitable than their less diverse peers.
Those are amazing statistics. It sounds like from a recruitment standpoint that companies have a lot more potential employees to dip into if they take on that kind of attitude, that a lot of people who are seeking work at companies that have these things in mind.
Exactly.
What is the International WELL Building Institute doing in particular to promote sustainability when it comes to buildings and organizations and communities?
And in addition to the WELL standard, we also have different rating systems, different rating programs. For example, we launched the WELL Health Safety Rating during the pandemic to respond to organizations' need to ensure their building environment is healthy and safe, and employees have the confidence to return back to office safely. And at the end of last year, we also launched the WELL Equity Rating, which is a rating looking at the diversity, equity, and inclusion aspects of organizations.
Was the pandemic a big setback in the sustainable projects? And is that coming back into focus a little bit more with the pandemic dying down?
I would say from the health and well-being front, it's the opposite. It actually, I would say pandemic really shed a light on why it is important to take consideration of health and well-being in our everyday decision-making and why we need to take action now.
Well, that's a really good point. What kind of things do you see in some cities or regions that show they're about to cross over to the next level? Maybe they're not there yet, but you're optimistic they're within reach of taking significant steps.
Well, I'm still optimistic where there's pending regulations. Like, we haven't seen a huge market shift to make all those necessary investment in technology, in building materials that's energy efficient and in health and well-being. But we know that the regulations are upcoming. So I do have hope for the U.S. to still be the leader, and especially the Biden administration rejoined the Paris Agreement and made some commitment in the past conference of parties at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Egypt. And a lot of other countries, I would say, for example, my own country, China, we literally wrote health and well-being into our long-term national strategy. So I'm very optimistic, although I shouldn't comment too much because they haven't done the perfect job in responding to COVID-19 pandemic. But this is a country that put health and well-being in the front and center of national strategy. Mm. And that's why our WELL project was really accelerated even during the pandemic. Another signal I would say is looking at the stock exchanges, right? We're not talking about government, but these are like affiliated with government policy trends. So Singapore Stock Exchange start to implement this mandatory ESG disclosure regulation on a lot of environmental issues and also diversity, equity, and inclusion topics in the coming years. So I do see Singapore to be playing a more and more significant role in leading sustainability globally.
When you take a look at the overall situation in terms of making cities smarter and more sustainable and so forth, do you see us making sufficient progress? Where do you see us in, say, 10 years down the road?
This is a really great question. I think globally, we are making progress in general, but I would say at a very different pace when it comes to regional focus. And for example, going back to the sewage and waste management, although New York City is making progress, but we also need to take into consideration our impact of those everyday decisions to other cities. For example, transferring those sewage and garbage from New York City to Alabama. Right. How does that impact the sustainability and health and well-being of the people in Alabama? So sure. I would say like some places are making progress, but we also need to make sure the process is equitable and all the cities or areas in the world can be collaborative.
Seems like the more cities that do it, the more momentum picks up and more people get the idea that it's worth spending the money. It's worth making that investment.
Exactly. So I really hope in 10 years on sustainable building, sustainable infrastructure, sustainable community is the new norm, right? We look at both environmental and social issues, and regulations and financing, they're both in place to make it happen. And there will be fewer questions on the return on investment, but more action and even competition in the actual implementation stage.
Yeah. So a lot of it too is just having the will to get it done in some cases.
Right. Totally.
Well, Minja, that's been really helpful. We have a lot of good information there. Is there some place too that listeners can go to get even more information about the International Wellbuilding Institute and about you?
Yes, of course. So our WELL standard and a lot of other rating programs and our accredited professional programs, enterprise provider programs, listeners can find all those information publicly available on our website at wellcertified.com.
Okay, that's wellcertified.com. You can also find the Wellbuilding Institute on Facebook and LinkedIn. Great. Thanks for being with us, Minja.
Thank you so much, Pat, for having me here.
Terrific. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We've been talking with Minja Yang, Vice President, Investing for Health at the International Wellbuilding Institute. As we mentioned early on, we'd like to pass on some info about other resources also designed to help make cities and buildings smarter. Some offer nuts and bolts advice. In New York, for example, the website NYC Sustainable Buildings is designed to help building owners adapt to a new local law that will require them over time to lower carbon emissions and offers guidelines for retrofitting their current systems. It also helps steer owners toward technical and financial help. Barclays, the big investment bank, has a website featuring its report on the future of smart cities and the challenges, and looks into potential investments and use of smart technology in construction and water and waste management, among other things. Then there's the Foundation for Planetary Intelligence, which helps design climate change solutions for cities and countries based on their population, water quality, natural resources, and all sorts of other conditions. If you're looking to explore European cities, say, that are offering a lot of innovative energy solutions, a good jumping-off spot is Schroeder's European Sustainable Cities Index, which ranks cities on clean public transport, electric vehicle charging stations, single-use plastic, waste policies, and other factors. And that's just scratching the surface. If you're interested in delving a little deeper, you can do a Google search of smart cities to find many more community-inspired examples around the world. You can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.